not just that used to it yet.
Okay, then we may begin.
Okay, you just fixed it.
We'll start out with Teddy, the certification of compliance with Wisconsin Open Meetings Law.
We are in compliance. The meeting was posted on February 26th and again on March 3rd.
Okay. Featured well. As far as attendance, everybody is in attendance on the committee except Mike Skolitsky, who called in. He's excused. He had a conflict. And you said Eddie?
Is getting his wisdom teeth pulled. We all remember those days, right?
It bothered me a bit.
Twofold, he's having
his own. Madeline may be coming. She may be running late, right?
Yeah, she must be. I haven't heard, so I would assume that she'd be here.
We have a quorum. And the feature program, then?
Yep, that would be Amy tonight doing the Kenosha Indoor Public Market Community Engagement Process.
All right. Hi. Thanks for being here. So tonight I'm going to share a really kind of interesting project that I've been getting more and more involved with over the past few months. And it's the first time I think UW Extension has really sat at a table with economic developers in this way and talked about real estate development and actual deal making with developers and the whole bit. So it's really kind of new territory for the organization, certainly new territory for me. So I'm going to bring you along on the ride a little bit and share with you what this idea is about and what's been happening and get your feedback. I'm going to use some time to actually ask you some focus group questions. So today's agenda, we're going to start just a kind of, I like the data side of things, and because markets involve food, we're going to talk about agriculture, just briefly the state of Wisconsin agriculture. Briefly touch on food hardship trends and kind of the link that maybe markets can fill getting fresh produce to at-risk communities. Planning for the future, talking just briefly about how we forecast future demand and how this is obviously kind of risky business that we're doing. So how do you forecast that a indoor public market can be supported in the future for years to come? Then the evolution of the idea, what the public market is, what makes markets successful, and then we'll go into the focus group. So we'll just jump right in because I'm on a timeline here. So okay, so the state of Wisconsin agriculture. UW Extension, we got one foot in the fields and one foot in the future, so we've got, you know, a lot of interest and stake in the state of America or of Wisconsin agriculture. So I thought we would just start here and look at how the nature of farming is changing. Between 1964 and 2012, this is based on ag census data, we're seeing the number of farms slowly declining, a slight uptick in 97, and now with 2012, the recession perhaps affecting the number of farms. Acreage in farms is also on the decline, seeing a similar trend that perhaps land is being put up for sale and developed. Acreage size of farm actually growing a bit, and that would make sense. The number of farms is declining, so maybe some farmers are buying up that land and consolidating property for their own farming enterprises. Wisconsin direct marketing farms, we're seeing the amount of money, the turnover and market demands around direct sale products. So those are farm stands, those are farmers markets, those are anything that there's no intermediary. So people can raise the product on their farm and sell it directly to the public. And we're seeing a steady increase in revenues. Direct marketing sales, also just that direct sale, talking between 1997 and 2012, significant increases, doubling in a matter of 15 years. So Relatedly, I wanted to touch on another kind of dynamic that's at work in our community. So outside of our farms and how things are changing in the ag side of things, we're also seeing some changes in basically what we call economic hardship. Hi.
You guys here for the public hearing portion of the meeting? That starts at 7. You're more than welcome to stay.
Good.
Absolutely. You are more than welcome to stay. I just wanted you to know this. That part didn't start till 7. I want you to be disappointed.
I didn't want to show up at 7 and have somebody say, oh, you should have been here at 6.
No, you're more than welcome to join us.
So are any of you familiar with the food share program? Have you ever, okay, could you tell us what you know of it? Right, so the food share program is the name for what was formerly food stamps. So technically the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, where we actually fund our nutrition program, that is a federal program, and they funnel monies through the state for assistance for low-income families. In our state, it's called food share. And we're going to see that even the nature of economic hardship by those partaking in the food share program is steadily increasing between 2000 and 2013, rising from 7.3% of the population to 24.1%. That's food share recipients in Kenosha County between those periods being eligible for food share. And that's based on household income and size of household. So we're seeing a lot of change in our communities, even in a short amount of time. So that brings us to the present day, where we're talking about a lot of changes in our communities and really also opportunities to bring in new business and new revenues into the county and how that might look. So that is where really this evolution of an idea has come from. We're going to be talking about indoor public market as an extension or kind of a new era for the Kenosha Common Market or the Kenosha Harbor Market. So all of you have been there, I assume.
But you can't use food share.
Well, that's very good, very good.
Right now,
so
you know,
they don't. So we're going to kind of talk about that, because UW Extension, I think, has a really unique role in kind of bringing about some changes to the way Harbor Market basically provides access to fresh fruits and vegetables. So yeah, where to start? So Kenosha Common Market is the partner. That is our asset. They have about 10,000 people on a Saturday at peak season coming down to the market. Their revenues, very, very solid. They are showing over 20% growth in revenue annually. So they are what we call like a gazelle, a high impact enterprise. So really, how do we take that asset? Economic developers are thinking, what can we do with this asset? And really the thing is, can we make this more than just a Saturday market? What would that look like? So just a short history about the market. Kenosha Common Markets, that's the umbrella term for the Harbor Market and also the indoor winter market. And now they're actually expanding out into west of the Eye, a market this season. So they have a number of markets, and they've been going since, I don't even have it there, I think it's 1992, 93. They're a 501c3 tax exempt organization. And since 2010, they've been really focused on getting an indoor public market feasibility study established. So they want to raise interest and capital around an indoor public market. So they put the bill for a very expensive study almost single-handedly. They've been very, very focused on the indoor public market from the start. And our organization has, as UW Extension, has been involved with Kenosha Harbor Market from the start as well. And Rose, our ag educator, will say it's always been the vision that this was an indoor public market, that this would evolve into an indoor public market. So in July of 2014, a small planning group released an RFP to the public on a number of different sites, and basically an RFP soliciting bids. So put a proposal out there. By the end of August, we had 6 respondents, and we did interviews and narrowed it down. And in February of 2015, we had our selection, Ted Spitzer from Market Ventures, Inc. So he's a superstar. And we're gonna learn more about that. I'll talk a little bit more about Ted later. But so through this process, over the last year that I've been involved with the market, we've had to really clarify what it is that we're seeking to do and keep our options open on what this might look like. We don't have a vision necessarily of what this interpublic market will look like, how it will interface with the harbor market, how it will interface with other small businesses. There's a lot of dynamics, and it's a very complex business plan. Interpublic market is an extremely complex organization. But we have come away with 6 goals that we'd like to see out of an interpublic market, and that would be expanding the employment base. We know that interpublic markets are basically holding spaces for vendors, and vendors are really the bread and butter. Without successful vendors, you'll have no market. So they need to be successful, they need to be profitable. Through the vendors, you'll have that employment base, and you'll see entrepreneurs maybe buying in, leasing space, and becoming an entrepreneur in their own rights. Number 2, establish a foundation for a regional food export industry. What does that mean? Basically, the vision of Kenosha is really within a footprint of Chicago markets. Seeing Kenosha really as sort of a hub that would export, prepare food on site, and basically ship to Chicago markets, prepare food on site, basically be a holding ground for export. We have access to the farms and the food, and now we can actually get it into Chicago markets. So it would be a food hub of sorts. Stimulate investment in downtown Kenosha. As many of you know, I do a lot of work with downtown Kenosha and their Main Street program, and this is the catalytic project that the consultants have identified to revitalize downtown Kenosha, that an indoor public market is the number one strategy, and public participation has validated that. I mean, there's overwhelming support for an indoor public market in our downtown. Creates a captivating public space accessible to all community members, provides entrepreneurs a low-risk, low-cost opportunity to start a business, and improves community health by increasing access to nutritious foods. So there's our goals. Our final goal there really does connect to, I think, the passion that many of us in our organization have as far as increasing access. And that's a special role that I've kind of carved out for myself in this project, is to find a way that the market would basically be accessible to food share participants by accepting EBT, electronic benefit transfers. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into this. So here's the organizations that have been involved over the past, I would say, 8 months. City of Kenosha put in CDBG funds for the funding of a feasibility study. Kenosha County has also stepped up. Jenny Tunkies is on our advisory board. Independent agriculture producers and downtown businesses, again, so important to have the vendors, to have the stakeholders on the ground, to have the producers buy in, and without the vendors, this is all for naught. Kenosha Common Markets, of course, Kenosha Area Business Alliance, they are a critical piece in this, also for gap funding, for financing, for exposure, but I see it as being the one player in this whole mix who can really be out in front and take some risk. Everything else here, we're pretty risk averse. And without without being a little proactive and seeing market opportunities, this is never, never going to happen. So they've got a vision, they've got the funding, but they've got the propensity to really take some risks and make something happen. Of course, the extension is involved, and even Be Energies, they are also represented on our board. So, okay, at this point, is there any questions? Because I'm just going to run through a couple more slides before we get into our focus group. So we've got about 15 minutes. Are there any questions at this point? Yes.
Did you ever think about doing something with the Metra to try to link up people coming from Chicago to go to the market? You can get them on the trolley, they could, you know.
Yes, that is a big push through the Convention Visitors Bureau, is basically those travelers on the weekends trying to get out of Chicago for the weekend. So taking the train, they have on their website, if you go on to the Convention Visitors Bureau, they have the maps, they've got, when you visit, I mean, the Metro stop is one of the main points of interest that they're trying to hit. So we don't know the site of the market. It could be very close to the Metro stop itself. Otherwise, you know, taking the streetcar, but that's, of course, very important that we are connecting with those modes of transportation, increasing access to the market, so.
And they haven't picked a site yet, or?
Sorry?
They haven't found a site yet?
Nope, so we're actually, that's part of the feasibility study as well, is looking at sites, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about the site selection, because that is so critical.
Well, they just opened up their winter market inside the theater.
Right. So that, I mean, that's transitional, and they're looking for a different site for a permanent, not a permanent location, a different site for the winter market. That the roadie is not really adequate at this point for what they're looking for. So they are looking for another site, even for just the winter market. I mean, so there's a lot of change, and they're under, the organization is really just experiencing all these like transitions due to their success. Really, they're having to grapple with a lot of things all at once. So what makes a market successful? These are from our consultant Ted Spitzer. So he works, his background, he's just got a tremendous repertoire of experience and publications and research, and he worked on the Milwaukee Public Market, so that's kind of the link close to home. He didn't design the exterior, so he can't be held accountable for that, and it almost failed 3 times. So there was some like issues.
Is that in the third ward?
That's in the third ward, yep. So, but it has persevered. So that's not necessarily the vision that we have for our market, but it helps people to understand what a public market is. It's basically independent vendors co-located. So what makes a public market successful? There's 5 things. First thing, probably most important, is a great site. So what they love about the third ward, and that was really, this was built and constructed before it was the hip area to be in. They located it here because it is right off the freeway. They knew that the visibility would be great. They also know, I mean, the real estate in that area was very affordable at the time, and they knew that it could be revitalized. Its strategic location downtown was a huge selling point for that market, and it remains one of its greatest assets. So,
do you know when that was built?
Sorry?
Do you know when it was built?
I could find out. I'm not sure. Yep.
Don't need to.
But anyway, so a great site, easily accessible, visible, easy circulation, lots of free at-grade parking. They know that people don't like parking garages. So that's got to be at grade. Pedestrian access, proximity to downtown, supportive context with other food businesses. The Milwaukee Public Market, if you've been down there recently, is just surrounded with other food businesses at this point. Gastropubs, bars, restaurants. It's become just, it's really spilled out into the larger area, which is ideally what you'd like to see, is that it becomes more of a district of high-quality foods. Supportive context, particularly other food businesses, and ease in cost of acquisition. We know that near Kenosha, there's a lot of vacant buildings, there's a lot of empty lots. We could perhaps acquire lands at a very good price. So we've got some advantages as far as site selection. Second part of what makes a market successful is the environment. Basically, a very captivating visual space. People don't like going into a warehouse to buy food. Especially if they're going to pay what they're going to pay for an experience. Really, they're going in there not just for food, not just in a transaction, but really a whole experience of getting to know a vendor, getting to know the products, that whole bit. So a place that people want to be in. This is in Cleveland. It was built at the heyday of markets, and it was built to be a public market, and supposedly I've never been, but it's breathtaking. A landmark structure would be ideal, something repurposed, a comfortable public space that welcomes all elements of the community, accessibility, well-designed stalls and infrastructure that support small food retailers. So even the stalls have to be architecturally designed, because it's got to be at a level that invites people in, allows for a lot of visual access of the foods. Hopefully you have food preparation going on site, so people need to be able to see all of that. So stall design, the environment of the market is really, really key. Third part of a successful market, engage professional staff. So this would be one position that the indoor public market would have to fill, at least one professional staff, even if it's part-time. We need a professional staff that can actively recruit vendors, interface with the community, promote the market, constantly just marketing, leasing, working the community for the good of the market. So we need professional management. Fourth point is consumers who care about local quality food, a culture of public market shopping. This was a big question when Ted was here, is what do you have to show for food tastes, preferences of shoppers here? Are there other Whole Foods? Are there Trader Joe's? Are there, where are people shopping? Is it Pick and Save? Is it Aldi? It's hard. We have a lot of people that shop at the Harbor Market on Saturdays. That's what we can really say. Other than that, it's people going to their local supermarkets. I don't know. This is the big question. Do we really have a culture of public market shopping? And then the fifth point is great vendors with unique products and services who carve out their niche regardless of competition. So that fifth point being probably the most important after the site is the vendors. So they want product innovation. So you're not just selling fruit, you're going to sell jams, and they're not just going to be regular jams, they're going to be a variety that you can't find anywhere else, and it's going to have, I mean, the product innovation, you have to find ways to make your product stand out. Service innovation is prepping the food on site, throwing the fish, that's what they do a lot in like fish markets, or you can catch your own salmon, and getting to know your customer, really going beyond the average transaction, that you really want to provide a service that they can't get anywhere else. Did you have a question?
I was in one of them, like you showed in Cleveland, I was in one in Cincinnati, it's quite impressive. The one thought that came to my mind is, what do they do with the food that's not salt? I mean, it's like lots, especially fish. Do they just chuck it? I mean, is that living?
I guess I'm not even aware. I'm sure that it can be sold.
That's one of the issues of fresh food, is, you know, have a shelf life, a short period of time. I'm wondering if someone can make a dollar doing it. I don't know. But like you showed that one in Cleveland, I went to one very similar. It's very impressive. It's very crowded. Something to do type of thing. So
a lot of places were donated to like Women's and Children's Horizon, the Shalom Center. Any, I know up in Racina, was there any kind of event we had with any kind of extra food was loaded up and taken to Women's and Children's Horizons, any place like that?
Okay, so local charities and nonprofits.
Yeah, so it wasn't just generally thrown away.
Right. Yeah, but I'm, the point I'm making is, regardless of who or how he gets rid of it, he's losing money on the proposition.
Right.
And that's something that they have to, maybe that's his problem. Right.
Well, and the product is marked up adequately that you would assume that there'd be losses, so.
Okay.
These vendors are pretty savvy and very experienced if they're ready to buy into a lease at an indoor public market, so I can find out though what are some other options. So, all right, we have like no time. I'm gonna pass over the questions. So can we jump into a few of the focus group questions?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm just going to kind of open it up. I was thinking maybe we could start here with Supervisor on the end, and then maybe the next question we can start with Supervisor Decker, just go. So kind of move down the line and I'll just kind of let you speak, and then we'll just open the floor up after that and get your feedback. And we're gonna be taking some notes, and this is going to be shared with our consultant. So your input is valid and very valuable to us. So we'll just jump in. So if that's all right, what problems can a Kenosha Indoor Public Market address? We'll start.
Well, I think the first and foremost problem is finding the proper site. Right now, they actually have a site. Are they planning on not using that outdoor area where they're using it now?
It's a good question on the site that's in consideration. Mm-hmm. But we are also looking at a lot of other options and possibly using a vacant building because there's 28 of them downtown. So, but I think the question really strikes to what are some problems in Kenosha that a public market could maybe address? So, Supervisor Decker,
you mean specifically in indoor? Like, right now we only have it up, well, not specifically, but it's very large in the summer, and then we run into the weather and a lot of vendors don't sell their stuff because it's winter, and you can do it year round when it's an indoor public market.
Okay. So you've got problems of just...
just the weather.
Okay. Right.
You know, down in San Francisco or wherever, you know, they don't have winter to worry about.
Mm-hmm. So it puts stress on the vendors. They can't maybe keep the vendors coming back because of the... Yeah. Okay. Anything else that problems that an indoor public market could address? When we had the focus group with other, I'll just kind of give you some food for thought. They were talking about issues of housing decline, vacancies downtown, kind of a deteriorating downtown, thinking of how the indoor public market might change the dynamic downtown. So. Any other thoughts on that?
Well, if you can bring anything to downtown, you're going to improve the business environment. The problem with Kenosha downtown, there's no draw. Harbor Market's down there, you know, go to Frank's, the Coffee Pot, any of them, they're crawling with people. And, you know, people go to the market, you go downtown, you see them wandering around with ears of corn. And, I mean, you draw people down.
Draw people. So you need a sort of anchor of sorts.
You have a reason to go down there.
Right.
I mean, I've been in the different markets like that, and they have, like, bakeries that have unusual stuff that, you know, more ethnic that you can, you know, which is, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and the trouble with a winter market is to know fresh vegetables. That's what people generally go for. But breads and sausage and, you know, stuff that's a year-round.
Okay. How about eating there? I mean, it's eat. that to me would be the big draw. It's a place you buy fresh things, you know, whatever it is, and you can go eat right there.
Right.
In the basement or the side or...
Yeah, we're considering that. I mean, there's kind of two arguments for it. One is that people will come and come there to eat, not just to shop, but, you know, this becomes like a restaurant, a food court of sorts, where people can come and get a meal and run back to work and they're going to get a different shopper kind of thing. The argument against it is that all of a sudden now we've become a food court and there's no space for really those innovations in product and service anymore. That you're not supporting your local producers in the same way without the produce, without the fresh food, unprocessed, unfinished product, that you aren't supporting your local growers in the same way. It becomes just a food court. You can do that at the mall, why go to the indoor public market? So
you have to deal with a whole bunch more city issues if you start doing prepared food.
Right. Well, and that's what they were saying. It's like once you open up, I mean, yeah, they're very complex organizations. So even the permitting and the licensing and things are very, very complicated for indoor public markets. So, all right, let's see what else we've got here. What are the biggest challenges to making a public market successful in Kenosha? The biggest challenges to making a public market successful. Supervisor Decker, do you have any ideas?
Well, the location is one of the challenges. Just because you're downtown, you don't have access to the freeway, which, yes, people will drive, but unlike Milwaukee, you see it, let's stop there, you know, that's different. They have to, like, plan that they're going to go there instead of it being a last-minute splurter thing. Population. Don't know if the population around the downtown area will support a public market, because like Milwaukee, I mean, the Third Ward is you have the north side of downtown, just like by the college and stuff, that's more affluent.
Absolutely.
Same with downtown and the Third Ward. I mean, that's an affluent area.
Right, so we're talking about a region of a district of the city that doesn't have necessarily consumers built in. I mean, it doesn't
right.
have.
Right, exactly.
Anyone else?
If you can make it a destination, they will come. It's like the Field of Dreams. I mean, if you can, I mean, you got a public market, fine, but if you can have other things to attract people there, public market, well, we'll go to the public market and go see the ice sculptures, and, you know, we'll go to the park and have a picnic, or, you know, they got a band playing over here. I mean, make
Excellent.
It more an event type of thing.
Yep, and actually the arts, that's a component of this that we're actually exploring, is having like visual arts venue within it, or performing arts, where people would actually be introduced to music and different performing artists as they shop. So it's a part of this as well. So other challenges to making this successful in Kenosha? We talked about the location is kind of isolated, doesn't have the in sort of the audience. Anything else? All right, we'll see what else. Should the market be located in an existing structure or newly constructed building? Do you have any suggested sites? So I printed this out just quickly so you can see what the downtown kind of looks like. Maybe you have some thoughts. So you already mentioned that the site near the Harbor Market now, that actually was designed with the intent of having a permanent market there. So that's located down, I would say, on block 59-ish, maybe 74, in that area there. Is there anyone else that has any thoughts of where a market would be best sited? Do you like it down on the lakefront? Do you think it'd be better near the Metro? If it's off of Sheridan, you might see more traffic that way. There's some that would like to see it out on Simmons Island.
We have a dog track that's open now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, sure. There's that old Walmart store sitting there on 52nd. It's a big empty building, but that doesn't go downtown.
That's it. I mean, there's just countless areas within the city of Kenosha, but the idea is to really consolidate the asset. We have an indoor or an outdoor market that's very successful. We'd like to have that co-located and be a catalytic project for the downtown. So there's a lot of moving parts here, but really it's got to be downtown.
How about, what is that, I don't know what block that is. If that's, what's 47? Isn't that a public building that's owned by the city of Kenosha?
Yeah, 158. Yeah, is that
47 or is that 38?
Is it?
I'll have to look at it. So maybe just make a note to Teddy for 47 or 38.
Okay. Just because 52nd Street is, you know, it's easy to get in there.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those arterials from directly from the freeway.
What's 91? Is that just a vacant?
Yeah, that's. What is all down there? Okay, yeah, we're running low on time. All right. Okay, so any other last thoughts on site? I mean, nothing far and away that you know of that you'd like to see. Okay. I don't know if we have time for any more. Let me see. Is there any last just unique qualities that you think the consultant should know about Kenosha? And we'll just end it with this. So anything that you'd like to pass along to our consultants? If you have any other thoughts, then we'll just kind of get back in touch with you after tonight's meeting and send them my way. So, okay, at that point, we're really out of time, so I'll just stop it here and thank you for your feedback and your input. I hope this was interesting for you, and thank you.
Thanks, Amy. We'll jump right into the program updates. I've got two from Terry and Carmelo, who couldn't be here tonight. Terry Ward, our nutrition program administrator. Our nutrition educators just completed a series at Wilson Elementary School with fourth graders. And the evaluation showed that 80% of the teachers observed or heard their students talking about the changes they had made at home regarding increasing the amount of fruit and vegetables they were willing to try. Okay, get that, that's good. That's a start. But more importantly, 100% of the teachers who had the classes in their classroom reported that they have changed their own behavior. So their own eating habits have improved. Since January of the first of the year, our Eating Smart and Being Active classes have been held. That's an 8-week series for individuals who have children or if they're a caregiver. And they learn nutrition and food resource management skills. Their results of those families who've just taken it, we've had let's see if I can get my eyes to focus with my context here. How many have done this? 17 have completed the 8-week series. 53% made positive changes in their consumption of vegetables, calcium-rich foods, and lean protein. And 71% have reduced the amount of fats and sugars that they've eaten. So good numbers. Carmelo wanted me to report that the Youth as Resources Board is now recruiting new members for this next program year, 2015-16, and they'll be here next month at the PDEC meeting giving a presentation on YAR. He also has met with Ted Galvin, who is the principal at Trevor-Wilmot Grade School, to get planning for the after-school STEM program using our CLOS Charitable Trust Funds. So that's moving along nicely.
Okay, very quickly, Spring into Gardening is this Saturday.
We still have a few spots open, and we're very excited that Dr. Fullen is going to be kind of our keynote speaker after lunch. He's going to be talking about health and nutrition and the relationship with gardening and horticulture and those kinds of things and healthy nutrition and everything. So if you know of anyone, we have some classes that are closed, but we still certainly have a lot of classes that are still open. And it's $40 for the day and includes lunch. So, and we have 130, 140 registered. So, or 100, 200, I'm sorry, 200.
I was thinking, well, I think it's closer to 300. Yeah,
it's
230,
240 registered.
The Kenosha County 4-H Council just hosted their annual Pinewood Derby for their sixth year in a row. They raced 134 cars in 3 hours, so we're right on top of everything. And then their community service is to Brass Elementary School in Kenosha, and they raced 31 cars. The next thing the council is working on doing is the Arts and Communications Festival, which is March 23rd, gives the youth enabled the opportunity to do speech demonstrations. We also have a photography piece with it where youth can take a picture, they'll get it judged, and that'll help them get ready for the fair and other pictures and information as they go. Summer camp for 3rd through 8th graders has been sent out, so we're collecting those. The high schoolers, which is 9th grade and above, are our counselors. So I'm knocking on counselors' doors going, come on, I know you want to volunteer, I know you want to do this. Another big thing that we have 4 youth that will be representing Kenosha County 4-H at the state teams. And they are a drama company and the press team. So that's a pretty big deal. It's a big honor to be on those state teams. So they'll go to state fair, take pictures. They host the Wisconsin Youth Conference and a few other things. The elementary STEM piece that I work with, Frank will be hosting its 4th session. So that'll be their final session, rotation. And Carmelo and I will be doing an evaluation with Jane and Brass since they have finished theirs. And then the ambassadors last night held their last COVID meeting for the year. We had 50 youth in attendance. So those numbers have been pretty high this year. So that's all I have for me.
Okay. I'm going to move into the youth and governance process. So you all have your packets. So let me walk through how this is going to happen. The top page is the schedule. So you'll see for which evening you're in. There are, I want you to note that Eddie's name is not on the list, okay? Because Eddie has applied to be a second year youth and governance member, and he has been invited to an interview. So the invitation letters just went out today. Okay? So we now will have youth respond with which night they choose to interview. We had, just as a reminder, we had 254 youth nominated, 28 youth applied, and we selected 24 to interview. So there'll be 12 interviews each night. So 4 youth were not provided an opportunity, but we actually asked them if they'd be interested in YAR. So they got a YAR board application with their So Sorry, So Sad letter. Okay.
Question. Are we all doing this on the second floor conference room?
You are. We have the room reserved.
I know, but is it... So 4 of us are going to be sitting in that room with 4 of these candidates?
Yeah,
one at a time.
They only come in one at a time.
One
interview at a time.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, you're the interview committee, so think of yourself as the inner team. You're the interview team.
Individually doing 12.
No. No, as a team. Think of yourself as a team. And you're going to interview 12 individuals. So the youth come in, they come into the second floor lobby area. Carmelo is there to welcome them, making them feel comfortable. He double checks their application to make sure the committee choices that they made are indeed the committee choices they wanted. Talks to the parents, answers questions, and then one at a time they're brought into the committee room where you're sitting at around a table. And they sit at the head of the table,
yes,
very nervous, and you want to smile at them, and they don't know how to smile back because their face is frozen. So you try to make them feel comfortable.
It's a very intimidating
Yeah,
situation.
It's very intimidating. And so we try hard to not make it intimidating.
I get you.
And so for the as they sign up for their interview nights, you will receive an email from me with all of the applications for that night. So Mike and Aaron, you will receive the 12 for your nights, as in Greg, and then Madeline and Doug, you will receive them for all 24 because you're doing both nights. okay? What you have behind your schedule are the rating sheets. So you will read each application, rate them. The questions are the questions that you'll ask that night. So there's room for you to take notes and write answers. When you leave that night, you will tally your scores and make your recommendation on points, and those will be handed in to Chairman Noble. He will take all of the data, compile it into this wonderful report to help you see how you ranked them all, how you ranked all the participants, okay? When I send you the applications, I'm asking that you keep that information confidential at this point. Just keep it to yourself. If you feel like you want to print it, print it. It'll be a lot of paper. I don't know. You might find yourself better on your devices just kind of paying attention to it that way. But I gave you the rating sheets. On the very back, you're going to see that I have a paperclip around two. Those are the returning youth. We actually do have two youth and governance members who have applied to be in the program a second year. Those are the two that you'll rank with those. And I don't know which night they're going to interview. They might be both on one night. They might be one night, one the other night. I don't know until they sign up for interviews. Okay. I am not able to be there that night. I typically play the role of being in the interview process. My mother's having health issues, and I need to be in Ohio that week. So I've asked Supervisor Kim Brunig, who has done this as many times as I have, actually, to fill in for me and play the role that I would play, and she willingly agreed. So she will be there in my place.
What was your role?
Looking good. I help make the youth feel comfortable, and I give the beginning sort of orientation, why you're here, what's going to happen, and then as a committee, then you each ask the questions, and I watch the clock. So, and I let them know when they have 1 minute. It's a 10-minute interview. And trust me, if you don't stay on schedule, Supervisor Decker, you know how that is. We have got to keep it on schedule, because otherwise you'll be there all night. Now, you will find, however, that because they are so incredibly nervous, their answers can be very, very short. You almost sometimes have to, is that all? Do you have anything else you want to add? You sort of want to draw it out of them. And that's another role I would play, trying to help them feel comfortable. And help
me
out.
The Eddies are
going to
be short.
You don't think it'll be short? You will definitely notice the returning ones have a little more confidence because they know what to expect. You know, they expect. So that's the role that I have played. I have played that timekeeper role.
Are they prepped at all or not?
Well, they are given, thanks to the advice of previous extension committee members, we've given them an interview tip sheet. So we've put together some of the best sort of practices, if you will, how to come prepared, how to think about how to present yourself. How to dress, you know, how to be confident, to think about questions that will enhance your skills and abilities. So that's the prep they get. Carmelo's out in the hallway to answer any questions that they might have, to even give them a little extra boost. That's it. For many of them, it's almost the first time they've ever been interviewed. You know, a few of them might have had a job interview in the past, but most of them will tell you, it's the first time they've had to answer questions about themselves.
That's great.
Yeah. You know, it is. Just the experience alone is incredibly valuable for the young people. It is. It really is. Yeah. So any other questions about the process? Okay. Once Chairman Noble has put together all of the information, your ratings, he's also going to be looking at what choices they made for committees. So I'm doing this because Supervisor Bruning needs to put together a spreadsheet. So I've said to Supervisor Noble, be sure and ask her for that spreadsheet. Because I don't know how she did this. But she could then identify, based upon their choices, they typically will get their first, second, or third choice of committee assignments. And then sort of lay that all out. And that decision or that recommendation that you make to the County Board Chairman, we'll do at the April 8th PDEC meeting. So we'll do that next month here. And it's my understanding, according to what you're going to learn tonight across the hall, they have no agenda items for you next month, so we don't have this time constraint hovering over us. We can talk about those recommendations as long as you'd like next month.
So there's no
agenda items.
Afterward?
No agenda items for afterwards. In that night, it's going to be nice, because you're going to be able to spend more time talking about that process. Yeah, so that's going to work out nice.
Is Eddie going to be here next meeting? Is he allowed?
I didn't even think of that till this moment. That's a good question.
It's a public meeting.
It is a public meeting.
Just a thought.
What do you all think?
Is there time to bash Eddie in front of
him?
Well, yeah, that seems a good question.
It is a very good question.
I would have to think almost ask him not to come. Just
wait till we see what does what he does in the interview.
Well, either way.
But in all fairness,
I'm trying to think of how he may be uncomfortable.
That's yeah, so it is. We're putting him in an awkward spot.
I'm just saying,
you know?
I think open to him.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then I think we have to say it's not an absence that's counted against him.
Yes. Yeah,
correct, right? I mean, because we'd almost say.
It doesn't matter at this point anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't, but it, I mean, for his record, we could just say.
Well, I think we should decide on this. I move that Eddie is excused from next month's meeting.
It doesn't count against him.
Okay.
He becomes invisible.
Okay, we got a second.
Any discussion? We have a motion by Supervisor Redlaw, second by Supervisor Cole. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, he's excused.
I'm glad you thought of that. I had not thought of that. And I even took his name off the list. Why didn't I think of that? Oh, good. Okay, excellent. No other questions about the process? This would be great. This would be good. Supervisor Gable, well, you've done this before, haven't you? I was thinking now that, yeah, you've been through this. So this, some of you have returned, so it'll be good. Supervisor Deckard's done it.
Yeah. Supervisor Skolitsky hasn't either because
he did last year because of his daughter.
And if Supervisor Skolitsky can't do it Tuesday night because something comes up,
you'll be the backup. Yeah. Excellent. Good. Hopefully he'll let us know so I can get you the applications.
Right.
Yeah, okay, perfect, good. All right, the only other thing on the agenda that would be my updates, and I just need to let you know that our county support staff member, Donna Zerovi, handed in her retirement notice to me this week, and she's retiring April 24th.
Oh, interview is again. It just never ends, does it?
She's worked for the county for 26 years, and she's been in our office about, I think, 18 of those years. Have you guys heard how many she said? I think
Did
it's 18.
You something?
That was in the 20s.
Is it maybe 20?
I thought it was in the 20s.
Yeah. She's got longer in the county, but, you know, most with us, but she's been in other departments. So yeah.
See, there is life after whatever year, right?
She's got a big smile on her face, I'll just tell you that.
I see her at the rec place quite a bit.
So I'm meeting with personnel next week.
I
didn't think of that either. I didn't know that. That would have been good. I'll be working with personnel to refill the position.
That's a county position.
It is a county position.
It isn't as intensive as the extension, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing.
In fact, the timeline is shorter.
Right, that's what
I'm hoping
I mean.
That
it's
we
not
can get
extensive.
You know, I was telling colleagues tonight that if we could get someone to start May 1st, that would be a beautiful thing.
Do you think you have a difficulty filling that?
You know, I guess I don't know. I don't know. Well, we'll have to work that out, you know, when I get with personnel to see what all that turns out to be. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Big changes for us, though.
Yeah.
Matriarch is gone.
The knowledgeable one where everything is.
So you want to talk around Teddy's back, you go to her. I know how it works.
You lose a person that's been around you. There's an institutional value there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what we've been telling her.
How things were done in the past, which doesn't mean we need to do it that way, but sometimes it helps to know, well, we tried that. You know.
The why, you know, why? Why did we, why does it have to be this way? And she'll have a good reason, you know? You're right, because we tried it or something, yeah. Or just remind us, where do we keep that?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that's
where
the one that's
going to
get
it. How do we find it? Well,
that's the one that's going to get it.
We are already sort of pushing the panic mode saying, okay, let's figure out how we're all going to get our time with Donna to get her to train each of us to do all these things we know we need to do. So we're doing that.
All right. Is that it?
That is. That's enough.
Motion to recess and reconvene at 7:00 in the other room.
So moved.
Seconded.
Motion to recess. All those in favor say aye.
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 That's all right.
I get to the 40s meeting. They're like, aye, aye, aye. You can tell I've been inspirational lately. Oh, boy.